everybody. I am Brandon Sewell. I am the owner of Seal Pro Painting in Central Florida and the host of the Off the Ladder podcast. We exist to help home service business owners learn so that they can lead well and ultimately live life off of the ladder. Today's guest on the show is Jeff. He is based out of Massachusetts, and his company right now is Encompass Capital LLC. He is in business consulting and planning. He is actually newly in business with that, just 1 year. They're serving all of the USA. Now, before he started his consulting, he recently exited his company where he had done $15 million in revenue. He was doing amazing with his business and was able to sell it. So we're going to jump into some of that story today. Anyway, so welcome to the show, Jeff. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
So did I cover everything pretty well in that introduction? Anything you want to add to it about how you got started, the name of your business, industry you're in, and what you guys were doing?
Yeah, I'll give you a rundown of what we created, what we sold. So I owned a company called Gervais Mechanical. I had the business for 19 years before I sold. It's now been in business for 20 years. I started a business like everyone else in the world, in the field, grinding, you know, doing my own billing, doing the work, doing my own marketing, advertising. Did that for a bunch of years, up to 2009. At that point, I had to sit down and talk with my brother, which is also in the HVAC plumbing industry. You know, really had a heart-to-heart with him saying, listen, you know, sick of the everyday grind, doing it together, doing it alone, you know, doing the books by myself, trying to collect money by myself, you know, just making ends meet, you know, you're making $100,000 a year on your own, you know, just doing all the work yourself is good. So we started to bid at night. So we had actually a set of blueprints. We would go home every night. We signed up for a website called Blue Book. So we got people's specs on multi-residential. That's right before the multi-residential boom happened. So me and my brother, we quoted jobs and we started to land them. So we were starting to actually grow a company at that point. Now, not having much experience in business, that was a big learning curve. I'll get to that in a minute. But we grew the new construction up to about 8 to 9 million within the course of 2 or 3 years. It was just easy back then. You could find people. It wasn't like a labor shortage and everything in like 2010 and stuff like that. And that was in the downtime. If you remember the 2008-2009 market crash, everyone was hurt. And we were actually growing because we found a unique thing in the industry. So we grew the company about $9 million, realized the new construction industry, working for big contractors and stuff, isn't what it's cracked up to be. Very low profits. They get you in back charges, you know, that whole song and dance. People listening to this podcast can probably relate to that. So we decided, hey, let's start a service division based off our new construction. So we started doing home services, commercial services, and grow and be more diverse. So now we're offering commercial service, new construction, and residential service. So we looked at it as having multiple revenue streams was good for the company. So we started to grow the service-based business, and we realized, geez, the profits are way better over here. So I focused on the service industry. My brother said, we can't just, you know, we realized we can't just drop a big division of our company. So what we did is we transformed, which is unique. We transformed the whole entire company into service. So we do very little new construction, if anything, right now. We're mostly residential home services. We do some commercial home services. But we got to a point where we were something. So we started going to market to sell. Our dream was never to pass the company along. We're entrepreneurs by heart, so we always wanted to, you know, have new businesses and have new ideas. I still do currently work for Gervais under a contract because I still am passionate about the business. But anyway, we grew the service-based business to $15 million in revenue. We realized this is a good time. We actually went through three or four transactions, and we finally found, the person like we fell in love with. It was like our business romance, and we said, you know what, these are the people, this is who we want to sell our company to. So we sold it 100%. How we got there, as you're growing, one of the most important tips I can give people is financials. When you're struggling, when you don't know what's going on, even when you're doing really good and you don't know why you're doing good, your financials are key to absolutely everything. So there's a few part of financials that you learn, and this is what why I created Encompass and how I want to teach people is, you have your gross revenue number, which is great. People brag about what they bill and how they do it, but if your bottom line isn't healthy, really your gross revenue number means nothing. You have fixed overhead numbers. So let's say you bill $100,000, and this is for any industry. If you bill $100,000, and then let's say you have fixed overhead of 34%, so $34,000, no matter what that is, that number is always going to be that. A very simple way to fix financials is increase sales. Sales and cash flow solves all issues in any industry, any company. And that's something like you learn as you're growing and you're scaling to that next level. So in the same instance for breakdown, let's say you bill $110,000. So you just bring in $10,000 extra dollars for that month. That brings your net, that brings your overhead number down to 31% versus 34%. You will have a little bit of gross expense in there, but for the most part, that's straight to your bottom line. If you can get $125,000, that actually drops that 34% number to 27%. So that extra money goes back in your pocket. So understanding those simple principles in business will help scale, get into a break even, knowing your break even every month, measuring that every day. That's how we scaled our business to where we scaled it to. And that's what separates successful people in downtimes and people who struggle and don't know. You should even get into as depth of why we got such a big multiple is we had our company broken down into residential service, residential install, commercial service, commercial install, new construction. We could pull our labor percentages, material percentages, our subcontract cost in any division of our company at any time, see where we're hurting, see where we're doing really good, see where we're excelling, measuring your sales, your close ratios, all that stuff. So that's how we excel to that level, understanding that level of business. And that's what I want. That's why I created Encompass Capital. For any industry, you understand business, you can help any industry. My favorite part of business is marketing, sales, and strategic planning, and obviously the financials. So I'm not big into wanting to do the work in the field. I did that for many years. I really am in love with the office. So that's kind of my quick story. If you have any
Yeah,
questions
no,
on it.
that's really good. There's a lot that we can dive into from there. So, I love that because the person who's listening to this, they're probably in that place where they're in the field, right? So if we rewind back to when you are in that place, can you help these guys understand and gals, if they're listening, what it looks like to get these things implemented into your business? Because I think when you say it, it sounds like something, especially when it's foreign to you, when you don't understand your financials and you think about like, man, how do I even start with trying to get this implemented? Do you have like, are there like rhythms to it? Like, did you set up like a specific day and time that you looked at it every week? Were you looking at it daily, weekly? Like, what did some of those rhythms and practices look like so that you could perfect those financials and really grow the business?
Yeah, so the first step is obviously getting a good accounting software. And if you don't know how to enter numbers yourself, I'm not great with entering the numbers in the computer. I understand very well on how to read the numbers and what to do with the numbers. So hiring someone you can, if you're a small company, you might be thinking, well, that's out of reach. It's not. My wife actually owns a virtual bookkeeping business for smaller companies like that. So those avenues are definitely out there. For someone that doesn't understand that. So the very first step is getting an accounting system, not just doing a Word document or an Excel spreadsheet. Someone you can give a tax guy and it is valuable to a business because that's how you would measure it. And then just understanding industry percentages and once you get that accounting software. So knowing what is your industry standard for labor? What is your industry standard for material? That's gross profit, which is different from net profit. Those are controllable overhead costs, material, labor, subcontractor cost, commission structure if you have sales guys. That's all controlled. You can figure that out, and you can kind of guess what that's going to be every month based off your workflow and your sales volume. So understanding those basic principles is step one to growing to that level. And I'll be honest with you, we made that mistake and we grew to that level without understanding that. And that's when we had a thing called growing pains. So we were like, what is going on? Why is this happening? So we educated ourselves, went to a lot of classes, talked to a lot of people, and I started understanding this side of the business. And that took me to a whole new level where you don't get hurt anymore because you understand what's going on.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And so, did you guys, just to reemphasize, did you guys have like a specific like time frame that you looked at these financials? Like, should guys be looking at this daily? Should they be looking at it weekly to know where they're at? And if they're trying to look at these numbers, how do they learn it? How do they really get to understand what they're looking at?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So again, starting off in business, I looked at it monthly. Definitely not the right move to look at it monthly. At least you're looking at it monthly. Some people don't even look at them numbers monthly. We then moved to weekly. Realized weekly was a little better. We understood it. We can measure it with the team. We can measure it ourselves. Daily is the secret sauce. Understanding daily how to measure your numbers, looking at, breaking it down to a daily revenue goal, daily sales goal, and then knowing that, hey, I'm behind 5,000, I got to do $5,000 more. Instead of doing 20 grand, I got to do 25 grand today. And then if you do 30 grand, be like, all right, I'm ahead now by 5 grand. Still push, like try to beat your number, but knowing where you're at every day is really where you should be. Another big secret is, making everything you can out of like a service-based call, like try to grab every single cent of revenue from that. And as in my coaching, I get way more in depth into that type of stuff. Even if you're a retail store, figuring out how to grab every thing from every customer, promoting and doing stuff like that, it drives numbers up and you don't even realize it. Driving up $5, $20, $100 per visit, means a lot. So measuring every day, I would say, would be the answer, a long-winded answer to your question.
That's good. So I'm just going to run this back. So obviously, guys, gals who are listening to this, to get off to a good stance in your business, you need to be educating yourself on your financials. You need to understand, what your industry standards are for charging on labor, where should your profit margins be, and all of that. And then educate yourself, understand what your overhead costs are as a business, understand what you need to do in sales to break even, to cover all of your overhead and your expenses, and then, obviously make a profit. So know what your break even is each month. And then I think this is probably one of the hardest things for business owners to grasp. And I think it's amazing that you mentioned it. Is looking at your numbers daily. I'm personally not even there yet, but my accountant, he'll ask me, because he'll do our bookkeeping and he'll say, "Hey, have you been looking at your numbers?" And I'm like, "No." He's like, "Well, did you brush your teeth today?" And I'm like, "Yes." He's like, "Well, you should look at your numbers like you brush your teeth. It should be a daily habit." And so I think for anyone who's listening to this, and I'm going to do this for myself, is challenge myself to set up a daily rhythm for looking at my numbers so that I know where I'm at.
So,
Now, Jeff,
one more.
go
Can I
ahead.
touch one more thing on that before we move past that subject? So,
Yeah.
the power of looking at your numbers every day, is you can project also what you're going to do that day, and then when you're really advanced, you can even see what you might do the next day. So, not only are you looking at the day before, you're looking at the current day, and you're looking at the day after. We do a thing called the 10 at 10. It's a 10-minute meeting every day at 10 o'clock with our team. So we make them aware of the opportunities on the board, what we build yesterday, what we took in for sales yesterday. Our cash flow is a very important part of business. And we can actually project, like today we project we're going to do this. Tomorrow, this is what's on the board. We need to pick up and do this. So getting to that level as a business owner is really where you really start to excel. Because at that point, it's not a guessing game. You know, and it should be pretty much set in stone within 5% of where you're going to be.
Yeah, that's good. And let me say this, and maybe you can add to this or correct me in anywhere where you think I'm missing the point for the listeners is, when you're sitting down and you're looking at these numbers, your overhead costs are going to be anything that your business has to cover or pay out, that isn't affected by your production, right? So, if nothing came in or nothing got produced, that's, just expenses that your business has that have to get covered no matter what. That could be, a lease on your office or building space. That could be, your whether you're leasing vehicles or car payments, your insurance, your licensing, software that you're using to run your business. Any type of subscriptions that you're having to pay, any of those fixed costs that are not going to be affected, that's your overhead costs. And you want to make sure that you have an understanding of what that number is monthly. So, okay, I need to be able to cover this. And then next you have your labor. So you need to understand okay, well, what is my labor each month? What am I paying out to my guys? And then, your material, if, have an understanding of the history of your business. If you do X amount of jobs each month, average ticket is this. This is how much we spend on average each month in material costs, and have a good understanding of that. And then obviously, this was something that I had to learn as a business owner is you have, your fixed, expenses, you have your labor, your material, cost of goods sold, and then you have your from all of that you get your net profit, right? And you need to be charging accordingly. So, for us, what we do is we take our labor, our material, and whatever that cost is for a job, we're doubling it to hit, our goal of hitting a profit margin of 50% or more. And so typically right now we range anywhere between like 50% to 67% on our jobs. And then what you're getting paid from as the owner of your business is you're getting paid out of that 50% profit margin, right? So what you're going to be able to take home as a business owner is in that profit margin. That profit margin is going to cover your expenses. It's gonna those fixed expenses that we talked about, and then what's left over is gonna be that net profit, and you're gonna get paid out of that. So I think it's important for anyone who's listening to this to understand how to price your jobs accordingly to make a profit, and know what you want to make as a business owner. And then to your point, Jeff, I think that's where if you really want to push your business forward, it's looking at those opportunities that you're leaving on the table, right? So you talked about, how can we upsell a customer on a service? Where are we leaving money on the table where we could be increasing our average ticket? So do you feel like that was a pretty good breakdown of that? Is there anything that you would want to add for the listeners and help them understand like those numbers?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was a very good breakdown. A few things I would add to that is where your point was with fixed costs, fixed overhead. It's very calculable to figure that out. Like you said, lease, rent, insurance, all that stuff. It's going to be basically the same every month. It will fluctuate a little bit, but figuring out that break-even number, right? So figuring out what is my overhead break-even, and then at that point, divided by the amount of months, days in a month. And then you can, at that point, really dial in to where you need to be for your billing rates. And obviously, labor is labor at that point per job, and material is material at that point per job, subcontractor, so on and so forth. So understanding that and getting that down, now you know my break even for the day with my overhead cost is this, because that's a really good point what you made on that. Also, don't ever be afraid to charge competitive rates. People who come in this industry or any industry, right? It doesn't matter what you do in life, even if you're a retail store, you cutting people's throats, you know, I say that term, you know, not literally, but you know, going in and price gouging people just to get work to put food on your table isn't helping anything, isn't helping the industry. Because at the end of the day, you're most likely losing a lot of money, or you're working for $5 an hour. So to your point of like taking the profits after and paying yourself, I go as far as putting myself in that overhead. So my office staff, my salary will go in that break-even number. So I get paid. You know, there's a good saying by a lot of rich people, pay yourself first. So make sure that you are included in that number. You work hard, it's your life, your risk. And that bonus money operates the company for growth. And you could take distributions. You know, if people know what distributions are, dividends, whatever, at the end of the month, as a bonus check, how cool would it feel to take a $10,000 check after you've already paid yourself because you knew your overhead costs, you know, just as a bonus to yourself because you have enough profits to leave in the company? So I would just add that to your statements.
Yeah, that's good. Now, so some people might ask, well, how do I figure out how to incorporate those fixed costs into my pricing? And, you know, when I think about it, we've been in business now for going on 7 years. And so we have a history of knowing, like, okay, how many jobs are we going to produce on average per month? How much revenue on average are we going to bring in? And so what I feel like we're able to do is look at our fixed expenses for the year, total that up, and then divide it by the amount of jobs that we anticipate doing for the year. And that can give us a good idea of like, okay, this is roughly like what our overhead expense is going to be for each job. Would you recommend people looking at it from in that way, or is there another way that you would look at, you know, pricing and the fixed expenses into your prices?
Yeah, so you can 100%. There's a few different ways to look at it, right? It all depends on your industry. If you're new construction industry, you're going to definitely look at it per putting amount of overhead per that job for that time frame. But if you're a service-based industry or retail industry, or it's quicker moving parts, I'll stick with the example of $34,000. An average work week is, you know, about 20 days, 22 days, working days. Obviously, a month is longer than that, but, you know, it's about 20, 22 days if you start counting working days. So that same example of $34,000 would be $1,700 a day, would be a fixed cost example for what we were saying. So if you have one crew out there, they hit $1,700. That just covers your fixed costs. That doesn't cover their labor or parts or anything like that. But the more vehicles you have out there, for instance, it's easier to cover that overhead number. Does that make any sense? And that can
Yeah,
kind
no,
of,
it does.
so if you take that $1,700 and you have three or four crews, you just divide that up by those many crews now. So now it's more achievable for them to hit that. So I really look at it in a very detailed manner, because it's super simple when you look at it like that. Like, oh, geez, this crew didn't cover that today. You know what I mean? So you should have revenue goals for every crew, service-based industry, or even if you're in sales or retail, you should have a sales goal every day for your store. And knowing that stuff and knowing where you're trailing behind is how you know, how you measure your company, and you know you're doing well or not. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's good. So, what you're saying is, you know, come up with what your fixed expense is and then break it down into like daily revenue goals. And then obviously, you know, like, okay, well, in order to cover just our fixed expenses, we need to do at least this much in sales just to cover the fixed expenses. And what you're saying is include, some salaries like for yourself as the owner, as well as like maybe office staff and things like that into those fixed expenses. So, okay, like in order for us to hit this and break even, this is what we need to do. So yeah, I really like that breakdown. I think that the listeners are really find value in everything that we went over there. Let's kind of shift. Obviously, financials are really important. You obviously built a business that you were able to sell, and I think there's a lot of value in that. I truly believe that anyone who is building a business should be building it to sell it. Having some type of exit strategy. Because you never know what life is going to throw at you. You never know what's going to come your way. So why put all of your time, energy, and emotion into growing something and then not being able to sell it? I think that would just be, a tragedy. It's a disservice to yourself, your family, your community. If you can build something and sell it, that will help you to better yourself, better your family, better your community, then that should be your goal. Now, people who are listening to this might be saying, well, I never even thought that I could build something to sell. I never even thought that I could, that my business, could have any value, or that I could, I think you, how much did you sell your business for again?
We sold that business for around $10 million, and we
Yeah.
were
So, I
grossing
mean,
around 15 million.
yeah. So, I mean, just, for those of you who are listening to this, kind of expand what you think is possible. And Jeff, let's dive in. What do you, the person who's listening to this, who's like, okay, well, how do I do that? If I want to sell, how do I build value? How do I build a company that has value for somebody who might want to purchase this, whether it's, private equity or, just a private buyer? What would you say to them? What are some really key things that they need to be focusing in on?
Yeah, so to touch base on the exit strategy, I'm very glad you said that. So a lot of people do things in life and they don't think of the next step. It's very important to, in my mind at least, always have an exit strategy for everything. You buy a property, you start a business, always think of how am I going to exit this? 100% what you said, people's goals may very well be sell your business. What does that look like? Understanding that process is a whole nother world. Understanding what EBITDA number means to tie into what we were talking about, what add backs are, all those important things when you're selling a business. Doing a good contract when you exit is another good thing. A lot of people will just sell a business for money and they have a horrible contract on the other end and they get hurt. Some people's strategy in this podcast may very well be generational business. Another great way, it wasn't my dream, but a lot of people have businesses and they take it over generation after generation and they're great businesses, right? So that exit strategy would be more, I'm just collecting a check for the rest of my life. I'm passing this on to my kids, right? Nothing wrong with that strategy. You may want to do that, but that next generation may want to sell it to your point. So always having an exit strategy is very important, whether it's, investing in real estate or business, or no matter what you do in life, always think of how am I getting out of this? To build value on that, think of unique ways. And this is where I really separated from the industry and my competition is when everyone's going right in the road, think of if I go left, where does that lead me? Is it a better path? Is it a different path, a more unique path? So we were one of the very first people, I still am one of the biggest companies in Central Mass. One of the ways I got there, one of my secret sauces was I sat down and I thought, like, what do people want, right? Like, what do people want? They don't just want an HVAC system. They want more than this. What is more valuable than necessarily just paying for it? I came up with warranty, right? So I'm like, someone knowing that we're there for them if the system breaks. So we put a 5-year warranty and we even had up to a 10-year warranty, full parts, full labor on everything we installed. I was the first one in the area to do that by far. And a lot of people took the idea from competitors. But the reason I did that, I didn't just do that to give someone a warranty. I thought in my head, how does that build value to the company, right? So what I did is I didn't include a service agreement in FI 10-year warranty. So what did that do? That took thousands of customers, generated revenue for the next 5 years on that customer, married them to me. So it allowed me back in the house to upsell, number one. Number two, it just regenerated revenue every day. So right now we're in a downturn. It's a bad, winter, economy's crazy. What do? I go to all those people for cleanings. Man, we have to, you want to keep your warranty on your system, right? Yes. We have to go clean the system. I got $300 per cleaning per system. So if they had two systems, $600, so on and so forth per customer. Now we're back in the house. I sold them a furnace. If the water heater was bad, well, guess what we did? We offered them a water heater. Hey, your water heater's old, your TMP's dripping. Hey, would you like us to replace your water heater too while we're here? So just coming up with this creative ideas in your business, which is what I love to do, and how, why one of the other reasons I created my Encompass Capital is to help people generate those ideas to get to that next level, not just with financials, but separate yourself from the industries.
Are you a home service business owner? Do you have a strategic way to get reviews for your business on Google, Facebook, and other platforms? If you don't, then you need to implement NiceJob. Since implementing NiceJob, we have grown our reviews from 10 all the way up to over 60 reviews online in less than a year. If you're interested in using this feature in your business and growing your Google My Business reviews, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up for a free trial of NiceJob. And let me know if you sign up so I can help you to implement it and get a strategy in place with your team to get more reviews so you can start winning on Google and beating out your competition locally. Yeah, that's really good. Here at Seal Pro Painting, we've done that recently. We started a service contract, which is pretty, to my knowledge, pretty unheard of for painting companies. But I sat down and I was like, how can I, so many painting companies, we touch the customer once and then that's it. It's like we paint their house and then they don't need their house painted for another 10, 15, and some people wait 20 years to paint their house. And so we're losing, just lifetime value with that customer. So I started to sit down and I was like, well, how, I looked at it, the HVAC and plumbing industry as an example. And I was like, these guys and that are attracting private equity, that are building, really valuable businesses, they're doing it through repeat service, right? And so they're making it to where they're able to service that customer on a reoccurring basis, right? And so one that locks out competition, you end up being, that person's go-to for whatever service you offer, and you're just building more lifetime value with that customer. So we started, I sat down and came up with a strategic way to offer a service contract for painting. And so we've been signing customers up. We've been doing some of the services, and it's been a great value add. And so I think just getting creative and doing those things that you're saying are amazing. And so, like, my goal is to grow that division of my company to where, like, I just have employees that come on and work full time just doing the service contracts. And then I have the other side of my company that is doing the residential repaints and stuff like that. So I love that you mentioned that. Can you go into, you mentioned EBITDA. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's expenses before income, taxes, and amortization. I can't even say the word. That's what it means, right?
Yeah, absolutely. One more thing I want to tie into that before I get into EBITDA is
Okay.
another way to add value to your company and to grow is through marketing, right? So marketing is very important. So coming up with unique plans. One year we were very successful with this, and I'm going to share this quick story with you. So Jordan's Furniture, right? In Massachusetts, they had a promotion. If the Red Sox win the World Series, everyone's furniture is free. So I heard that and I thought, how creative is that, right? Like, they're getting people in, people are taking a risk. If the Red Sox win the World Series, their furniture is free, right? So I kind of took the idea and morphed it, understood how he did it. So we said, at the Worcester Airport thermostat, if it's over 95 degrees on Labor Day, everyone's install from Memorial Day to Labor Day is 100% free. Now, how did we do that? We're just thinking like, well, why would you do that, right? You can call your insurance company. You can actually get coverage for, millions of dollars or whatever. So I had $4 million of coverage. It only cost me 30, 40 grand for that policy, right? So if I did, I wanted it to be over 95 degrees, because what good publicity would that be, right? It's over. It only cost me 30 grand. I gave out $4 million to the public to help, the community. Fortunately, it was not. But that, doing creative marketing ideas like that too will also help scale you to a whole new level that no one else is doing. Because when you're going up against someone else with your painting contracts, if you have a unique promotion I don't have, you're most likely going to win the contract over me, right? So always thinking like that is another reason how we got to where we got so quick. Now to do you want I now I'll get into EBITDA, I'm sorry, unless you have any questions on what I just said.
Well, I'll just add on to something that you just mentioned, and it's the marketing. And just a couple episodes before this one, we'll have a guy named Dan Antonelli on, and he has a book called Branded, Not Blanded, and it's all about your brand and setting yourself apart in your market with your branding. And
Yes.
so I think that's another thing. To if you're listening to this, keep that in mind. Like, you set yourself apart with your marketing, with your branding, and I think building a brand in your community and just having that brand equity is really important. So when you look at your brand and you're trying to dominate your market, don't blend in with what everybody else is doing. Try to set yourself apart in every way that you possibly can. That's actually one of our goals this year, is to do a little bit of rebranding and really build a brand where we're just going to be like the one painting company in our area that just sticks out, and just become like that force in our community. So I like what you said there. But yeah, let's jump into what we just mentioned with EBITDA, because as you had mentioned, that's one of the ways that people who are buying companies are going to value your company, is based on your EBITDA. So I'm not an expert on this. I've heard it a lot. So if you could dive into that and just share what like the company that bought yours, what they were looking at, what were they looking for, it that gave your company value.
Yeah, so there's three profitable margins to measure in a company. There's gross profit, which is overhead you can control, labor, material, et cetera, subcontractor cost. There's net profit, which is everything we were talking about with fixed overhead, rent, et cetera. And then there's EBITDA, which ties into net profit. So what EBITDA is it's your net profit number with add backs. So think of it like this. Let's say you decide to leave your company. If you're leaving your company 100% and you make $200,000 a year, but it only is going to cost $150,000 or $100,000 to replace your body, or maybe you're an absentee owner and you don't even need to be replaced, that salary is a 100% add back to your net profit number, which would be considered EBITDA. If you run your vehicle through it, your vehicle insurance, your vehicle, your payments, well, your payments will go on your balance sheet if it's a loan. But if you lease your vehicle like I did, that is an add back. If you had golfing memberships, if you whatever you do that you run through the company that benefits you personally, maybe your wife's vehicle, your kid's vehicle, your kid's salary. Some people give the kids salaries. That's a tax advantage that, is for a different discussion. All that stuff that you take personal, your cell phone, goes back into your net profit number. So it's very important to understand that. And that's another huge reason why I created this company, is to help people with exit strategies to get understand that. People might think, like, I only make 2% net profit a year. You know what I mean? It's nothing, no one's going to look at me. But when you put your ad backs in, well, hey, now you're at 8%, if you plan on exiting. So understanding what an ad back is very important to an EBITDA number. And you are right. Depreciation usually would go back in the EBITDA number. And if you have a loan on your balance sheet, so if you have 10 vehicles on your balance sheet, lines of credit, your interest will go on your P&L. The vehicle payments will not, if they're loans, right? So the interest goes on, the interest goes back as an add back, because usually when you sell a company, it's debt free, cash free, which means all your debt's paid off, but you keep your cash. So that it's important to understand all that, and that's a whole different world of running a business, is just knowing that stuff.
Are you a home service business owner that is trying to get off the ladder and work on your business instead of in it? Well, you need a robust CRM that is going to help your business to be more efficient and streamlined so that you can get your time back to focus on things that are going to help your business grow. Now, Jobber is going to help you to manage your client requests, your quotes, your jobs, and your invoicing. You can do everything all in one place and manage everything from start to finish. And not to mention Jobber payments. You don't have to chase around checks, try to go and collect cash, or wait for checks to come in the mail anymore. You can just get paid right on the spot with Jobber payments. If you're interested in implementing Jobber into your business, click on the show notes below and sign up for a free trial of Jobber. That's not it. Reach out to me. I want to help make sure that you maximize everything that Jobber has to offer so that you can get your business growing right away. Thank you so much. And let's get back to the Off the Ladder podcast. Yeah. And I mean, it's that's why I think, you know, for anyone who's listening to this, I think it's really important. I had a coach, you know, recently just, you know, moved out of his program. But I do always on the podcast recommend to the listeners to get a coach. And I think right now you're just making such a strong point for why it's important to have a coach, have a consultant, somebody who can help you to understand these nuances of the financials and the numbers. Because, you know, even for myself, even though I have a pretty good understanding of it, it's still there's a lot that I don't understand. So I really appreciate the value that you're bringing for me and also for the listeners here. What else would you say that is going to help someone who's looking to build a business to sell it? What other things can they get in place to build a business that's valuable and can sell? I know that I've heard in the past, like having the business where it doesn't, the more that it doesn't require you, the better, right? So if you have employees who are out in the field doing the work, if you have someone who is running like the administrative tasks of the business and the office, you know, someone who's doing sales, someone who's managing production. Obviously, the more that you're getting to that point, you're taking, you know, yourself out of that equation more, which from my understanding helps the business become more valuable to a potential buyer.
Absolutely. So there's a few other assets to be having a valuable business and to having something that someone wants to buy, right? The most important thing in your company is your employees. So without your employees, unless you're a one-man shop, it's just you, it is very important. It's just as important as your customers, if not more important. Understanding your employees, what's important to employees? Is it benefits? Is it hourly wage? Is it incentives? What's important to your employees? Is it functions? We always had functions and gatherings, and we always tried to have the family, good culture. So that adds a lot of value, because when you're trying to find help and people like, it's a great place to work, this and that, having a good culture, creating a good environment is probably one of the number one things. After that would be basically measuring your competition. Who's in the area? Who's my competition? What's their pricing? Getting feedback from customers, maybe offering, hey, here's a $10 Dunkin' card. If I can just see their quote, just give me their quote. Let me snap a picture of it. Understanding creative things like that also helps you get to that level, right? And that's not illegal. Offering someone a Dunkin' Donut card to see someone else's quote. I mean, it's just strategic thinking, right? The industry, understanding the industry you're in, you know, like I said, you know, looking at the warranty part of what I said, what do people want? What am I doing? Why am I doing this? So understanding that is also a massive part of getting to the next level, putting a lot of thought into it while you're driving, you know, and you know, just that type of stuff when you have downtime and you have time to think, helps you get to those levels. But you know, customer service would be the next big hurdle over employees. Having good customer service, word of mouth, it should be 100% sale to you. If someone recommends your painting company to me, I'm basically hiring you without you even walking through the door because my friend John had such a great experience with you, right? So the customer service aspect is absolutely huge. And that ties into good employees, right? Because if you have a good culture with your employees, the customer is going to have a better feel of you because the employee is naturally going to say good things about the company and you to that customer. And they feel like, hey, I hired a good company. I'm helping out, you know, a good industry. I'm helping out a good company. I'm not just throwing my money to a massive corporation that doesn't care. So I think those values mean a lot to a company as well.
Yeah, that's really good. And so I think ultimately, it's like when I think of it, it's pretty straightforward. Build value, right? You want to build a company that is going to have all of these boxes checked. And just to reiterate them, you know, you want to make sure, that you have a great culture within your company. So building a business where and I think this ties back into pricing too. In order to like build this business, you need to make sure that you're pricing your services right so that you can build a business that has good culture with your employees. You're able to take care of them. You're able to you know, make sure that it's a great environment for them. And I think unfortunately, and one of my favorite podcasts is Tommy Mello, but he says this all the time. He says so many people will come to him and say, well, hey, you know, I feel like if I charge that, I'm ripping somebody off. And he's like, well, who you're really ripping off is your employees and yourself. You know, he'll say, you know, if you don't charge enough to take care of your employees, well, you're basically, you know, screwing them over. And they're like, well, is that, he says, like, you know, is that all right? Is that ethical? You know, you have these guys who are working for you, taking care of your customers, taking care of you and your business. They should be taken care of. So, you know, charge enough to take care of your employees and build a great culture. You know, charge enough to make sure that you can afford to invest in your brand. To build a brand that promotes a great culture, that promotes you know, the fact that you're involved in your community and gets recognized very easily within your the community that you serve. And you know, you want to beat out your competition, you know, so in order to become better than your competition, you're going to have to charge more than them. You know, you're going to have to be offering things that they're not offering, value that they're not, and that comes with a price tag. You can't, you know, build value and then not charge for it. So if you're building value as a business owner, make sure you're charging accordingly. And I, you know, it's like if you're, I would say if you're not building value and you're charging more, well, then that's not right. But if you are building value, then charge for it. You know, just reiterating the industry warranty that you have, you know, set yourself apart and offer amazing customer service. If you don't care about your company, if you don't care about your customers and the level of service that you offer, then you're not going to build a valuable company. So if you don't care that you have a, you know, 4-star rating on Google or on other platforms, you're not building a company that has value. So make sure that you care about your reputation, make sure that you care about, you know, your reviews online and what people are saying about you, so that you can obviously grow and scale and get repeat business and all of those things. Those are going to be things that that build more value. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to that? Just wanted to reiterate those points.
No, I mean, basically, those are the main sticking points to having a successful business. You laid that out pretty well. Just always, no matter if you have a bad day or if things are down, always try to have a positive attitude. I know that that's hard. But mentally, if you want something in life, have a goal for yourself. Setting goals is huge too. So, set a monthly goal, yearly goal, whether it's personal or business-wise, right? Every morning when you wake up, think of that goal or read it on an index card. Before you go to bed every night, think of that goal, read it on an index card. Your subconscious mind, whether you believe it or not, will actually help you create that and generate that during the day if you just believe in yourself that much. You're going to have bad days, you're going to have good days. It's just overcoming it. And when people fail is when they hit that wall, right? And they don't get past it. It's like the fly flying into glass a million times, right? When you keep doing that, people give up and the fly dies, right? Figuring out like, hey, the window's open right above me to get through that window, right? So not giving up and powering through hard times, because business isn't always fun. You're going to have customers, you're going to have employee issues, you're going to have money issues. Like, it's not all rosy. And we make it sound good and fun, talking on a podcast, but running a successful business is—it's hard. It's mentally hard on
Yeah, for
you. It's
sure.
hard on your family. Finding those ways to get away, clear your head, and like I said, always try to have a positive mentality with your employees and stuff like that, because they feed in and they see when you're down and they see when you're beat. You know what I mean? If you
Yeah.
don't seem that way on the outside, at least it keeps everyone motivated and moving. So I think that would be a big takeaway, in life and business,
Yeah, that's really good. And I, you know, just to add to that point, I think that's why it's so important to have a coach or consultant that's working with you on your goals strategically, because when you're doing it alone, it's so much harder. When you have somebody in your corner who can help you see things from a clear perspective, who can help you to evaluate, you know, different situations that you're confronting in your business and help to bring perspective and strategy to those situations. It's going to help you so much more to win. So I think that's another key point in this conversation is, you know, obviously have those goals, have those things that you want to accomplish in your business, but don't try to do it alone. Come along somebody. And you know, I'll speak for myself. When I initially hired my when I got into my first coaching program, it was very like low level, not expensive, but it was a start. So I think I paid like you know, $300 a month to be a part of this program. And there wasn't any one-to-one coaching, but there was a mastermind group that I met with, and there was some coaching material that I had access to. And then, you know, I grew my business, and then I invested a little bit more. And then, you know, right now I'm trying to take my business to another level. So I'm going to be investing even more for coaching and consulting because, you know, when you're trying to go to that next level in your business, you need to work with people who have been where you want to be so that they can help you avoid the common mistakes and so that you can get there faster. You know, I'm sure, Jeff, like you in that process of growing your business and selling it, you face challenges and obstacles along the way that you can help other people avoid.
The best part about doing something is, going to college is great and, education's important, but self-taught knowledge, I paid millions of dollars for my education because of, self-taught and, making mistakes and learning from those mistakes. And, I wouldn't change it for the world, because it made it who I am. It made me who I am today. And, I've changed other people's, help other people's businesses and lives with, my experiences. So, and the coaching thing is, I think that's very important. And that's something in the beginning, started my business, I was like very stubborn. Like, I know more than everyone. I can do this. And then you start talking to other individuals, like you said, that are doing it and grinding every day, and holding each other accountable. And you realize, like, wow, this is a very powerful thing, networking. I also belong to a mastermind class, a mastermind group. I mean, very, very powerful, what we do in that group. I have a coach right now that I still talk to about, higher net worth things. But it's just having that person to bounce ideas off of. And coaching is only as good as the client wants it to be, right? Like, I could tell you to do XYZ to your business, right? Legally, I can't make you do it. I'm never going to make you do it. I'm going to give you my advice on what to do. What you do with it from there is up to you. But meeting with me every week and having me ask you, hey, did you do that? No, I decided not to do it. All right, it gets dropped. I said, yeah, I have to get to it. Eventually, someone will end up being, you know what, let me try it and see what happens. So that's the powerful thing about a coach. Like, you can listen to this, you could write down a whole 4 pages of notes. If you don't implement any of it, it doesn't mean anything. And that's where hiring someone like me would, help you get to that level.
Yeah, that's really good. I reference this a lot, and I'm just I follow a lot that Tommy Millo does, and he's had a lot of success with his business in Arizona. I think he sold to private equity last year for like 200 million. So I mean he's a fantastic guy. But one of the things that he says is like, people will come to him and ask, like, Tommy, why do you give away this, free information all the time on like your podcasts and, these newsletters and, these talks that you do? He's like, to be honest with you, almost all of you, 90% of you or more, aren't going to do it. You're not going to implement what I'm telling you. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that business owners face is like this lack of taking action. And I share this in previous episodes, but my business almost failed and crumbled to the ground in 2022, and that's when I hired a coach again, and I turned things around. But it was because I implemented every single thing that my coach told me. He said, do this. I went and did it. Hey, I need you to do this. Go do it. And I was able to turn my business around in like 4 months, from thinking I was going to have to shut it down, and to now where we're going to do one of our best years ever this year. So to your point is take action, implement what you're listening to on this podcast, other podcasts. Don't just get head knowledge, get discipline. And I'll also add that, something that really helped me to implement stuff like this in my business was getting discipline in my personal life. So I talk about this a lot is like, I wake up at 4 a.m. and I read and I go to the gym at 5 and I work out. And just having that personal discipline of like doing something hard that I don't want to do. Then when there's stuff that comes up in my business where it's like, it's going to be hard, I don't want to do it. I'm able to find something inside of me that just goes and does it, right? So I think that's really valuable. Well, I want to be respectful of your time. We're about to hit the top of the hour. I want to open up right now for you to just talk about the consulting services that you offer, and then share with the listeners how they could get in touch with you if they want to have a conversation about using your consulting services and coaching. So yeah, just how could they get in touch with you for that?
Yeah, so I'll actually give my cell phone out on this podcast. My cell's 1-774-696-3499. Feel free to text me or call me anytime on that. You can also visit my website, encompasscapital.com. It's N with a hyphen, though, compasscapital.com. You can also email me, jeff@encompasscapital.com. Or if they get in touch with you, if I'm sure you would further contact my way. I'm definitely interested in, one-on-one coaching right now. Eventually, when we build a bigger culture, we can do group, consulting. But right now, I'm more focused on one-on-one coaching. Like I said, financials, strategic business planning would be huge. That's something I get really excited about, things we talked about. understanding your business, understanding industry. We'll dive in as deep as even going into marketing or your call center if you want. The call center is also a huge part of success because that's my first experience with your painting company. When I call you, how does that get treated, right? That immediately puts an impression on a company. Is it professional? Is it unprofessional? Simple things like just like getting a 1-800 number from RingCentral or something like that versus just having, a cell phone number. When you're trying to scale a big business. One-on-one coaching is what I really want to focus on right now and what I would love to help my clients. I have other people that want to help with the coaching. So as we grow our clientele, obviously, I'll always be involved, but we'll have other consultants too.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I'll also put Jeff's contact information in the show notes when this goes live. So when you're listening, you can go and look for his information in the show notes. I'll put his website and contact information there so you can reach out to him. But Jeff, I really appreciate your time and just the value that you've brought to the show. And just want to say congratulations to you on, selling your business and the success that you've had. For anyone who is running a small business, they know how hard it is and the challenges that small business owners face every day. So, just props to you for building something that was so valuable and being able to sell it. And I'm sure that's been a huge blessing for your family, and everything that concerns you. So that's awesome to hear about. We're going to go ahead and wrap this up. So I just want to say to our listeners, thank you so much for tuning into the Off the Ladder podcast. If you've enjoyed this show, I would ask if you're watching on YouTube, please like the show, comment on it, share your feedback, subscribe to the YouTube channel. And then if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, please rate and review the show and then share it with somebody so that they can glean from the information that's shared here. And thank you so much for being a listener, and we'll see you next time on the next episode of the Off the Ladder podcast.